Hello, everyone. I am Mackenzie Bean, Managing Editor with Becker's Hospital Review. Thank you for tuning in to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Today, I am pleased to be joined by Dr. Peter Antal, Chief Medical Officer and President of the Amwell Medical Group, to discuss how telemedicine is serving as a key response strategy for the novel coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Antal, thank you for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you, Mackenzie. I am happy to join.
Perfect. So let's dive into our first topic of conversation. The White House issued an emergency coronavirus spending bill March 5th, which includes $500 million in waivers for Medicare telehealth restrictions. Why is telemedicine such an important response strategy for this pandemic?
Well, gosh, that's a great question. And, we're undergoing a pandemic. You know, the WHO yesterday made that official. And we have a national emergency and multiple states have declared emergencies. You know, this really is unfortunately a pretty big deal. Now, you know, we don't want to project panic or fear or anything like that. But I think us in the health system are realizing that we need every resource we have. We really, this is an all hands on deck moment. I think, you know, our approach so far as a group of health systems around the country is to be like the duck on the surface of the water, that we want patients and the public to see a calm appearance, but you know, underneath the surface, our little feet are moving fast, and they should be, because we really need to be prepared. You know, over the last decade, telehealth has been quietly maybe becoming a really not just a little side effort, but really an established part of our healthcare system. You know, telehealth is simply another point of care. If you think of an emergency department or an urgent care center or a primary care office as points of care, even the telephone as a point of care, telehealth has established itself as another meaningful point of care in delivering healthcare in America as well as around the world. Now, there have been big victories in the telehealth space, like telestroke and teleradiology, but growingly, consumer-facing telehealth, which we specialize in at American Well, or Amwell, I should say, it's really had a great impact on the patient side, on helping patients access care and improve their ability to care for their chronic diseases and maintain continuity of care, et cetera. You know, I would say that the main barrier to date in this kind of healthcare, this telehealth, has been some imposed by CMS and Medicare. You know, they do restrict telehealth reimbursement in the home. And, you know, we call this the rural or clinical site restrictions. So this is just for fee-for-service Medicare. And, you know, growingly, seniors are covered under Medicare Advantage, which generally is very receptive to telehealth. But, you know, a lot of our healthcare reimbursement structure follows the lead of Medicare and the fee-for-service reimbursement regime. So this has had a slowing impact. I think what's really notable is the congressional appropriation this week not only recognized the importance of telehealth in responding to this outbreak, but recognized that seniors are at real risk. And they provided emergency funding and emergency waivers on that site restriction, recognizing that seniors who have respiratory symptoms need evaluation, and telehealth is a wonderful venue for that. But even almost more so, seniors have medical needs. And in this time of fear and panic, as well, this time where person-to-person spread is occurring, seniors need to get that health care they need. And what better place than to get it through telehealth right in their home?
Let's dig a little bit deeper into how exactly telehealth is being used in this pandemic. What type of telemedicine approaches are hospitals using to screen or treat COVID-19 patients?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and we're really partnering with the hospitals and locking arms on a coordinated effort. You know, our ecosystem alone at Amwell, we work with over 250 hospital systems, which encompasses over 2,000 freestanding hospitals. So there's quite a reach there. And when you combine that with the fact that we have many other clients that drive demand, like health systems health plans and employers, we really have created kind of a healthcare ecosystem that lives in the cloud, so to speak. I think that the hospital systems, by and large, have spoken. And what they're generally saying is telehealth should be a front line for evaluating patients who have respiratory symptoms. We don't want, we're still in the respiratory season, and we don't want every patient who has runny nose or cough or other respiratory symptoms showing up in emergency departments. We simply don't have the capacity. Also, emergency department waiting rooms would simply become a place where everyone's at risk, where people are spreading all kinds of things, influenza and COVID and URIs and other viruses. So, telehealth's an ideal front line, and the hospital systems are encouraging their patients to use telehealth first, unless they're having an emergency or need obvious hands-on care. And I think that, growingly, the other piece here is not only are the hospital systems turning to Amwell for our clinical urgent care services, but they're growingly engaging their own providers to turn themselves on for telehealth visits. Imagine if you're a primary care doctor, you're probably getting 10, 15, 20 calls a day of patients with acute respiratory symptoms who want to come in to be seen. And primary care offices, of course, they want to do what's best for their patients, but they also have to take into account the safety of their other patients, their waiting room, and their staff, and need other tools. And telehealth's a wonderful tool for that.
And what obstacles may be preventing healthcare organizations from maximizing the benefits of telemedicine during the pandemic?
Yeah, another great question. I think that, one of the things to think about is patient awareness. Hospitals are having an all hands on deck moment, and many of them have reached out to Amwell for assistance on messaging to patients, helping patients understand the telehealth's available, just simple awareness, and also helping them understand how it's used and when it can be used. But I think general patient awareness, there are still many patients out there that don't know that their own hospital system and their own doctors may be able to see them from the home right on their iPad or their smartphone. I think the second one is provider supply. Every organization in America, essentially, more or less, with some exceptions, is bringing all the provider supply they can to bear in their urgent care centers, in their emergency departments, in their primary care facilities. There are concerns about bed shortages in hospital settings, ICU shortages, ventilator shortages. So, we're really, I think, in telehealth, we're being extremely creative with our partners in finding that additional supply that exists. There are physicians who are licensed in good standing and board certified, but who are working in administrative roles right now. We're trying to engage them. There are, believe it or not, providers who are under quarantine right now from an exposure, but well and healthy. Those providers can use their clinical skills through the internet to provide services. So, provider supply is obviously a key issue. And then there are community challenges, the third bucket here, the lack of testing that has existed to date. The story on the ground is very different than the story you hear in Washington. Many states have no more than 20 tests available for the whole state each day, and they're having to ration testing. Many emergency departments are overwhelmed. Many organizations are not accepting same-day visits in the primary care setting because of this outbreak. So our health systems are straining, and that's become a bit of a barrier, but it also is an argument for utilizing telehealth as a tool.
Absolutely. And I know this pandemic has really been a call to action for everyone in the healthcare industry. Amwell unveiled its National Coronavirus Response Program March 3rd. Can you discuss some of the key components of this program?
Sure. Absolutely. And thanks, Mackenzie. That's a great question. So we saw this coming. I'm not at all saying that to say we have some sort of ESP or can see the future, but I think it was obvious to most in the healthcare world that what was happening in China was likely to spread. We were hopeful that it would maybe only minimally spread through travel and maybe it would burn itself out like SARS did, but that's obviously not the case so far. Our preparation has been intensive from the beginning. We have a well-trained workforce. Our providers in the urgent care setting are already performing similar services every year during a flu epidemic, and we've had to just adapt our clinical workflows and protocols for some of the nuances that are a little different in this case. So, for example, the limitations in testing And the fact that for influenza, there are antivirals, for the COVID-19 virus at this point, there are no proven antivirals that can be used as a specific treatment regimen. Our internal structure, you know, we've stood up an emergency task force, an infection control officer, an on-call system. We've stood up all sorts of internal support processes for the providers, including quality teams and network operation teams. And then, you know, maybe as another bulleted item, we've really dramatically expanded our ability to scale. So we're recruiting externally, we're re-engaging our cloud of trained and credentialed providers that may be less active lately with us. We're re-engaging with them and getting them on the platform. We're coordinating with all the other interested parties, with our hospital systems, with our health plans, with our employers. Some of them want advice, some of them want help on messaging to patients, and some of them want to coordinate on referrals and other clinical matters. And then finally, I would just add, we're advocating on the local, state, and federal level. There's a number of things happening. There are some states instituting emergency protocols that might even include some medical licensure reciprocities that might help us bring to bear more doctors. There are federal efforts, as I mentioned earlier, around allowing for emergency reimbursement for fee-for-service Medicare members, waiving of co-payments in general for this care, and also some of the tactical details, CPT codes and ICD-10s, and some of the things that are usually required in order to submit claims to insurers are being expedited.
Sounds like it's been a very broad-reaching response on Amwell's part. One follow-up from me, how are you currently working with health officials to keep up to date on clinical guidelines and screening questions?
Yeah, Mackenzie, thanks for that. That's a great question. The you know, it is key and essential, and it's really part of what we do as clinicians to follow evidence-based practices, or in the absence of evidence-based practices. You know, evidence-based means, you know, the research literature and all that, you know, this is such a quick moving, brand new novel virus that the evidence-based guidance we have is really based on past experience, similar corona type viruses, and other similar outbreaks of different types of viruses like influenza. You know, the CDC is one of the main sources that we use as guidance, but we are obviously working with many other organizations, including the WHO. We're working with CMS and HHS, more so on the policy and reimbursement side. We are coordinating very closely with local health departments. Local health departments are really key when we are in need of patients being tested to date, although we'll increasingly see that testing revert to commercial testing companies. Also, you know, we're coordinating with local health departments on some of the other public health requirements. So should a patient be placed under quarantine? What are the work requirements or work recommendations if a patient's had a high risk exposure and things like this? So, you know, a lot of work there. And I would just add, you know, we're working with the Alliance for Connected Care, which is an advocacy arm in Washington. We're working with Anthem and a number of our other partners on the federal level, making sure that we help advise and partner with CMS and CDC and Congress to make sure that all the emergency steps that are being taken are thought through, are practical, and are going to be helpful on the ground.
This outbreak has shown several cracks in the nation's outbreak preparedness. How can telemedicine be used to help fortify the country's response to future outbreaks or pandemics?
Yeah, wow. We are learning, and we're learning each day. You know, I would cite as an example, this is a non-healthcare example, but, you know, on the administrative side, our company uses, you know, not to tout other products, but we use WebEx for a lot of our meetings for video conferencing. And we're even seeing WebEx outages now as more and more people work from home or take public school classes or university classes from home. I cite that only as an example of there are things you don't think about until it happens or that people hadn't been prepared for. And I think there's a lot of that happening. We're all learning a lot in the private sector. The public sector is learning a lot. I think right now We're really focusing on understanding exactly the series of steps that are occurring in the Seattle area. We're partnered with the University of Washington and really working hard to help support them as they become strained or even overwhelmed by what's happening. And really, you know, things you see include things that, again, are hard to predict. I know of one hospital where it was shared with me that they're down to 3 days left of surgical masks in the operating room. And that's probably less due to the outbreak itself and more due to the supply chain breakdown and the rush on masks that is happening, you know, in the public level. You know, we're seeing challenges with the number of beds, number of ICU beds, number of ventilators. And so we're really watching all of this. And I think that, you know, having said all of that about what's happening on the ground, I think at the governmental level and at the private sector level, we're all seeing that telehealth is an incredible tool for situations like this. We're also seeing parallels to how telehealth has been used in the past and can be used in the event of natural disasters, which can cause some of these same effects, usually more so on a state or local level. So think tornadoes and hurricanes and flooding. And fires, I would say, also in California, where telehealth was used in Northern California when many medical facilities literally burned down. So, you know, telehealth can help increase supply of physicians, can help solve for geography and bring providers from across the state to patients that need it. We're essentially force multiplying the capabilities of the health system. We can care for those in the home who are chronically ill or who have limited mobility. In a case like this, where the problem is infectious, we can play a role in helping to prevent spread a little bit. So I think everyone's recognizing this. And I would highlight, you know, even at the level of the CDC and CMS, I think there's a recognition, we've even had conversations, that systems need to be established so that at a government level, a coordinated medical response can occur. And I think we're going to understand better over the next year or two what that looks like and what that means. But I think there's a future where telehealth will really be embedded in our national system.
Absolutely. Well, I have one more question here that I would love your perspective on, Dr. Antal. How do you think this pandemic will redefine or solidify telemedicine's role in healthcare overall?
Sure. Yeah. And I touched on that a little bit in your last question, but I'll add a little bit more. You know, this has certainly shined a light on telehealth. And we in the industry certainly are not viewing this in any way as sort of a business opportunity. But instead, we relish the fact that we now are armed and ready to play a meaningful role in our national, you know, public health efforts here. And we're delighted that we can play a role. We're not delighted on the outbreak itself, obviously. This is a really terrible thing that's happening, but we see that we can really make a difference. And, you know, I think that the telehealth right now is there's much more awareness that this exists at the patient level. The hospital level, hospitals are really all of a sudden scrambling, literally, and also being creative in their thinking about how they should be deploying telehealth as a tool in their business. Providers, individual providers, are adopting very quickly. In fact, we're overwhelmed right now in our company in terms of our technical team's ability to get providers online. You know, there are processes and steps that need to happen, including credentialing and training and provisioning them with credentials and all of those things. So providers are adopting. I think even at the demand generation side, the health plans, the employers, you know, this will have that meaningful impact on reimbursement policies and on health plan and employer engagement with telehealth as a big part of their HR strategy or their member strategies going forward. And the last point I would make is we've really strengthened the public-private relationships during this time. I think, you know, at the risk of being immodest, I think that, again, the national and the local government officials have really worked hard to partner with industry and to learn from us and how we can work together. But I think they've also, again, been impressed by how we've stepped up and how we've engaged with them and we've advised them and helped on some of the issues they're trying to tackle. You know, we're all in this together. We're all Americans. None of us wants to see anyone harmed or sick from a virus like this. So this is a real moment where we're all locking arms. Your politics don't matter. Your business title doesn't matter. It's really about helping patients.
Well, Dr. Antal, thank you so much for your time and thought-provoking responses today. We also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Amwell. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.
Well, thanks, Mackenzie.